from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 295, recorded live Thursday, December 1st, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode of the Framework series, Scott talks with Rob Reynolds about the Chuck Norris framework.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today, we're kicking off another series. We did the startup series, and certainly as you have startups, send them to me. But I want to talk about frameworks. I want to talk about different people designing different frameworks. How do you know when a framework's done? How do you know when a framework is good? And how do you know when it's a framework? So kicking off our framework series, we're going to talk to Rob Reynolds. And he's also speaking on behalf of Drew Sellers, his partner in crime. And they have created something that they call the Chuck Norris Framework. How's it going, Rob?
Going great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Up at github.com/Chuck Norris. And of course, I want to know what you're going to do when Chuck Norris tells you not to use his name. Are you going to switch to another famous kung fu artist? Is he going to become the Jet Li framework? Or what's the plan?
Sure.
And that's a good question, though. He's hardcore with the social media. You watch. After this talk, Chuck will be on the phone with you. It's going to be awesome.
Actually, he won't even do that. He'll just roundhouse kick me through the phone, and then he'll change to a different name.
If he allows you to live, then I consider that a win. So up at github.com/Chuck Norris, you've got a thing called the Chuck Norris Framework. And it's kind of it appears to be kind of a loosely confederated group of utilities that solve a bunch of different problems within the .NET ecosystem. It's all open source, and they're all named after different things that that Chuck Norris would do, like headlock, counterpunch, roundhouse, dropkick, and uppercut, things like that. How did this start? Take me back to when the initial concept came up.
It started a while back. Like you said, this is a framework series. How do you decide when you have a framework versus something you're just doing for yourself? It started with uppercut. We were building out a conventional type build, and they're like, we really could open source this, and we could, make this a thing. And the minute we did that, we saw the quality go way up. And so what Uppercut is, it's actually the, like I said, it's a templated build system, kind of like the idea of a drag and drop build, but not in a bad sense. you bring in stuff, you open up a settings file, you make a couple of edits, and the rest of the file has your conventions in it, you close that down and you have yourself an automated build.
So it's not like a cruise control or a TeamCity, but it's not like MS Build, right? Does it sit between them?
It's kind of like the MS Build, right? It's actually built on NAND.
Okay, so NAND, of course, people may not remember, but NAND was the .NET port of ANT, and NAND is a build system that was used 2003 to 2006, really, really fervently and kind of, no pun intended. And, kind of when MS Build came out, a lot of people felt MS Build killed NAND, but there's still a lot of people using it because it's in a very useful, way to create a build file. So you're eschewing MS Build completely, right? There's no MS Build, underneath this.
Oh, yeah, there's still MS Build. Of course, when you compile, you always got to go down to like MS Build.
Okay. So you're not calling the compiler yourself.
No, somebody could get into that particular step, the compile step, and actually do an extension and replace it, and then just call CSC, or VBC, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. But why would I want to use something like this? What does this do that MS Build doesn't do? Because whenever someone is deciding to choose a framework, they have to figure out what kind of, and I was going to use the word ego, but, with any open source software, there's ego involved. And I don't mean like major capital E ego, like, we're awesome, use our framework. But there has to be at least enough we're awesome, use our framework that is, that justifies the existence of the framework itself, right? So you saw a problem that was big enough that you said, me and Drew can solve this. So you don't think MS Build by itself does what you need it to do. So what does this add on to that?
MS Build really is, it gives you the idea of you have compilation. So, in one sense of the word of MS Build, The other sense is that you could use MS Build and you can write the project files and you can set up your build. Right, mm-hmm. That's a very customized build. You're saying, I want to build it, I want to run the tests, I want to package it up really nicely. Oh, I also want to do a version assembly. Mm-hmm. All right here in the script. Well, what if we took that idea and we kind of third-partied that whole side, right? And so I just bring it in and all that stuff is already there. So I don't have to rewrite the wheel every single time.
I see. So it's like a boilerplate.
I can just drop in the updates. So I'm actually upgrading my build. And if I'm doing all my customizations over here to the side for that particular build, then I can really upgrade my build and take advantage of newer things really quickly.
Okay, so is it like a, it's a boilerplate, it's best practices, it's builds in the real world encapsulated into a series of best practices and conventions.
Right. And okay. Of course, yes, every framework we work on is pretty much opinionated. Someone called that an ego involved. Of course. So.
No, I think that's you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, if you don't have an opinion, you should probably not be writing a framework. But there are very open frameworks that allow you to build up your own opinions or your own conventions. And there's definitely a place for that. NAT, MS Build, those are what I consider frameworks, but they don't really have opinions on them. You kind of add those in as you go. And so Uppercut is kind of, let's put an opinion on something. And, people do the same thing usually. They run their build, they run their tests, they run any other type of analyzers, then they start packaging up that content, and then, have it prepared so that they can actually deploy it. And Uppercut kind of takes all that process for you, so you can just focus on code. You don't have to focus on the automated build as much. Also, because it provides a build.bat file, right, you can easily hook that into Jenkins or TeamCity or Cruise Control.
Mm-hmm. I think you've brought up an interesting point in that you're juxtaposing the difference between a framework that exists but doesn't impose its opinions or really kind of wallow in them and really declare, we have lots of opinions and this is what we think you should do. You gave a couple of examples of frameworks without opinions. What are some others? I mean, do you think that something like NuGet is an opinionated framework, or it's just kind of passive and then it allows you to build your conventions on top of it?
I think it's slightly opinionated. The one thing that came out with NuGet when we brought that out is that everybody wanted to be able to change the packages folder and make it the live folder, right? Mm-hmm. And so there was an opinion there saying, well, we really want it to be this. And so I do think it is a bit opinionated. But that said, I think the opinions help to set standards, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
.NET development itself, I think, is a little lacking in like standards of, hey, how do I set up my source control? Do I put a source folder here, or do I just start putting in projects all at this level, right? Where I think other languages are a little bit more opinionated, and they actually have a standard for how you set up your structure.
That's a really good point. I've actually mentioned before that I felt that .NET itself and the .NET framework, the base class library, I thought was very opinionated. There was a lot of thought put into the design of the framework, although not everyone agrees with it. But for the build system and the project references, and like you said, even something as simple as where do I put my files, there's really nothing. There's no guidance. There's no opinion at all. Does that exist in the Java world? I don't remember. When I was working in Java in the late 90s and the early 2000s, I don't remember Java telling me where to put stuff. That may have changed.
Well, I don't know that I could speak intelligently on Java per se, but what I understand is, like, is it Maven that will force you to put that in a certain structure?
Maven is very opinionated, but Maven isn't Java, and Maven didn't always exist. But of course, that's right. the sign of a good framework is one that comes up and becomes ubiquitous, and then everyone thinks of it as being one and the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is all of the Chuck Norris framework very opinionated, or is it just Roundhouse? Not Roundhouse, rather Uppercut. See, I'm confusing my kung fu or my karate.
Dropkick is probably the least opinionated, mm-hmm. Just because it is the deployment framework, and we're not going to predispose to know how you're going to deploy your code and how you're going to need, you know, everything set up in your environment. And so we leave that one as the most open. You may want to use Roundhouse, and Roundhouse is the database migrations framework. If you want to use your own, you know, migrations framework, and Dropkick's going to leave that wide open for you to make that decision. You know, you may want to, you know, clean out all your code before you dump the new stuff on. So you kind of build up your conventions in a deployment plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go through the list a little bit. So we've got Uppercut, which is the build system. The opinionated build system. And then there's packages that could be plugged into Uppercut. So you can make it as opinionated as you want, take it even farther in the direction that you want. Then there's Roundhouse, which is a migration tool that deals with database migrations using SQL files and then kind of versions that. And it has to be reasonably opinionated because it's setting up an entire way of doing database migrations.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Then there's Dropkick, and that is a deployment framework. So that's once you've got your stuff built and you're ready to deploy, that's what Dropkick is. And you said that was the least opinionated? Because deployments are so different. I mean, everyone wants to do things a different way.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then there's a couple of other smaller projects, Counterpunch, Headlock, scheduling tools. And then there's this base class library called Chuck. How new is Chuck? And is that something that you knew needed to exist when you started designing the framework? Or did you kind of discover it and then realize you needed to go and put some abstractions and stuff up there?
Actually, that was brought up by Drew as we started to see an evolution of these tools having some of the same underlying items. We said, you know, we really need like a base framework that could be the... And so if you think of like what Nant is, if you say that's just a library of a whole bunch of tasks that somebody threw down, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can think of Chuck the same way. Is that's just a whole library. We just throw all the tasks, the low-level tasks that we do in there. And then these frameworks build up on top of that. And so what we've said or what we've noted is that when these frameworks reach a 2.0 status, some of them aren't even 1.0 yet, that they will use the Chuck DLL. But until that time, they're welcome to use, you know, what they're using now.
Mm-hmm.
With the framework, we kind of split out, you know, Drew works on several of them and I work on several of them. And then we get together on some of them and pair together to do some work on some of the frameworks.
How important do you think it is when someone designs a framework to have a partner or peer programmer that really sees things the way that they see? Because I've always seen you and Drew working together. Is that just a coincidence because you work at the same company, or did you find your soulmate in the coding world?
You know, I think Drew Seller's soulmate is Chris Patterson. They work together on the mass transit project. But no, I think the coincidence there is that we did work together for probably 3 to 4 years. And I kind of considered Drew a mentor. He really helped me, you know, kind of get some great perspective on things that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. It's great to have a different perspective. So I think that when it comes to frameworks, you have your perspective. Hopefully you can get the perspective of the community as they start using it. But it's really good to also be able to just bounce ideas back and forth off of somebody. I was going to say a lot of these ideas, so like Counterpunch is pretty much vaporware, but we've talked about it. It was meant as a replacement for a scheduling tool that we had a lot of pain and suffering in. And a lot of the tools that we built is because we had some pain or suffering problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
With the Chuck Norris framework, I think the biggest thing for us in the company that we worked together in was that we had basically 5 levels of auditors, and we had to answer auditing questions, and we needed tools that could help us meet all these, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley requirements. So that's kind of where it came from, the idea that we could also make it fun and we could make it, you know, very, very developer friendly and simple. Simple was always the goal.
Now, very, very briefly, maybe mention what Sarbanes-Oxley is, because there's a constraint implied within frameworks like that, like Sarbanes-Oxley and other kind of federal guidelines for doing things that could potentially inspire one to go and make a framework. And I want to explore when you might find yourself doing a framework because of some unusual constraint at work.
Sarbanes-Oxley is it's really controls and auditing, and it's trying to figure out who did what, when, and why, right? And did they know what they were doing when they did it? I guess that's the biggest summary of, the, I think, the intent. And I could be wrong, but I think that's the biggest summary of the intent for Sarbanes-Oxley.
And this is part of your the company that you work at. And I was going to ask you, when you're making
but
a framework. Sorry? You did work at.
Since moved on. Drew's also moved on to another position. But look back fondly on the experience, of course.
This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Careers 2.0 and our friends at Stack Overflow. Careers 2.0 is the only career site dedicated to matching great developers with great jobs. You can post your open dev positions on Careers 2.0 today, reach the entire development community, all 15 million monthly visitors on Stack Overflow. The best part is you'll receive exceptional candidates, not that massive pile of unqualified resumes that you're used to wading through. Will save you tons of time and headaches. When you post your job, you can even choose to receive a candidate's careers profile instead of just their resume, making your candidate's sorting even easier. The guys over at Stack Overflow believe in their product so much that if you're not incredibly happy, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. And to top it off, as a valued Hansel Minutes listener, you'll get a free Stack Overflow t-shirt when you purchase a job listing. To get your free t-shirt, use the code HANSELMINUTES and check it out on careers.stackoverflow.com. Once again, that URL, careers.stackoverflow.com.
How much of the framework was created based on the things that were trying to be imposed upon you by different regulations? I'm trying to understand, is they say necessity is the mother of invention. You know, have you found that that you needed the pressure, the outside pressure, and the intense constraint from these different systems to cause you to create your own framework, or do you think you would have made your own framework anyway?
You know, it's hard to say. A lot of times we as developers do things because we find an interesting problem area, but sometimes, and probably most of the time, we do things because we're trying to meet some problem that we have, right? And so, you know, you'll find yourself, if you work on multiple frameworks like I do, okay, I need to concentrate here because it's going to solve this need that I have now, right? And so it's kind of a prioritization thing. Oh, I'd really like to do that, but this is more important. It's going to get, you know, me to the point where I can solve this concern that I have.
Mm-hmm. And you both worked at the same company when you started this, right? And that was the company that had the unusual requirements.
Yes.
When you're working for a company and you're making your framework in response to some of the constraints around that company, I've always wondered if the bosses, if the suits, care or understand that you are opinionated. Because I wonder sometimes when I see really opinionated frameworks and frameworks that have a lot of breadth, I think the Chuck Norris framework has the potential to have a lot of breadth because it's basically codified both of your guys' opinions and you're kind of spackling over or puttying over things in the .NET framework ecosystem that you don't like. But if you were a suit or some kind of business person at your last job, you might have no idea. You take the technical guy's word for it. You're like, yeah, you know, the build system in .NET sucks. We're going to write our own. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with our business, but we're going to do it.
Oh, absolutely. This actually, we had a reason. We had 98 builds. Or 98 source control repositories we needed to get builds on. And so we actually had to put a convention in. And when we first did it, it wasn't, I would say, very good. It was good enough to meet the need. But as we were going through and we were doing this, we were like, oh, we could do this, and oh, we could do this other thing, which would actually save us time. And at some point, we got to the point where we said, okay, so now we have what I would consider a framework. What do we do with this? And so at that point, it became less about working on it at work and more about working on it at home. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you open source or work on open source, sometimes you have to have the approval of the business. You got to worry that, you know, maybe the business isn't going to like this or something, or want to own it when you're done.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any pushback from the suits that this was a problem? Did they have any sense that you were off doing something that wasn't necessarily moving the business forward in a strict sense? Or is that not a consideration when creating a framework?
you know, it's always a consideration because you want to keep your job.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
No, you got to be up front and you got to say, hey, look, you know, I see something here. And if you've built that good relationship with the people that you're working with, then you've built up a sense of trust, right? And I think we had that. And I think that once we open sourced it, the business benefited huge. And I think that's kind of a misnomer with maybe some businesses. They think that using open source is bad in some way, or, you know, it could potentially open up some problems. But a lot of times what I've seen is when the business kind of allows for that to happen, the products that they use become better. So there's definitely a mutual benefit aspect of it.
When you moved to the new company and you guys kind of, you know, parted ways with the place that inspired you to need to make the framework, did the framework's direction change at all, or did you detect that it did?
Absolutely. And probably the best example of that is Uppercut. When we were at the company, they're fine, you know, checking everything in. You know, it's kind of a heavy framework itself because, you know, you got to have NAND, you got to have in unit, you got to have, you know, if you're using obfuscation, you got to have, you know, the obfuscator. But you got to have all these libraries in. We just checked it all in the source control, and because everything was local, and we were using Subversion, it wasn't that big a deal. Going to a new company, they kind of balked at that. They're like, you know, I'd really rather all these tools not actually be set with the actual, you know, in source control, because I want to keep source control very, very small.
So you're saying that their concern about being opinionated was with all the things that it brought along with it. Not necessarily the opinions that it brought, but all of the required underlying stuff to enable that opinion.
No, there was a little bit with the opinions of the framework itself. I mean, we try to follow good conventions and we make those conventions configurable, right? And so where there was differences, that tool already had the ability to say, okay, well, we can do it this way for this piece, right? And that's kind of where I like the idea of convention over configuration, is that there is a convention for the tool, but please allow me to override that. Roundhouse really does a fantastic job of that. Mm-hmm. It has really just one required parameter, but a lot of the settings in it are all configurable and they all have defaults. And when I went to the new company, they had a lot of ideas on how to change some of that or make it better, you know? And so, yeah, definitely. I think going to a new company actually brings about more perspective for you as a person, so that you can actually take this framework that you have and see how you can evolve it so it actually meets more scenarios.
Did you end up having to go and remove some stuff when you brought it to the new company?
No, never really had a problem with having to remove anything. Now, not saying that couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. What we've seen is they liked it and then they wanted to do some other things as well. And so, and I guess that brings up a really interesting point, is how do you gauge what is just for this business versus what could benefit a community, right?
Exactly.
So where do you draw line and say, this is just going to be something that you guys do versus this is going to be something that benefits everybody? And so I guess one particular example was, you know, with Roundhouse, I really need those assemblies to be signed so that I could actually incorporate it into Visual Studio and an extension.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing actually benefits the entire community. So that was pretty much a slam dunk. But another concern was, you know, I really don't want Log4Net to be required as the logging tool. I'd rather have it be open so I could just plug in my own logger. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to carry around this extra DLL when using the library version of it. The executable, it's all brought together as just one file.
Right, and you've actually caught me. I was leading you a certain direction, and where that was is your opinions shaped it initially, but the requirements of the business that you were in kind of were the primary driver of your framework. The thing that you're looking at in front of you, the thing that's in front of your face, ultimately is the number one influencer of your framework. Then you move to another company, you introduce the framework. But at the same time, simultaneously, the framework is becoming more and more popular. So then, how do you know who your primary source of requirement should be, right? Is it Is it the community that appreciates it and uses it and doesn't work at your company and doesn't care about Sarbanes-Oxley or whatever the new, you know, requirement of the day is? How do you serve your day job and the community at the same time when designing a framework?
The best I can say is try to incorporate configuration so that when there is the idea that you could change, you know, frameworks should be a little bit more open in the ability to configure things or be at least extensible so that when you run into stuff like this, you can step in and actually put in, you know, that particular company. If you don't, then you kind of got to draw a hard line in the sand. And luckily, I haven't had to do this yet, or I found the need to have to do this. Because in the end, if the company says, you know, we're going to go a different direction, they just don't use your framework. And that's kind of because they don't own the framework. They're kind of a consumer. And oh, yeah, they have one of the primary maintainers that are there. And they can, yes, influence that guy or gal. But in the end, that is, to me at least, I'm here, and that is a, what's the term I'm looking for? It's kind of a, it's nice to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to use that for our business, you know, and we're going to do that, and that's why we brought that person on, and we want to change that framework, I think that should be a new framework or something internal where they just fork the project and go a different way.
Right. But how does your... It was getting back to ego and how, you know, all these different things drive a framework. Requirements, the requirements that are currently there, the requirements that are coming, job requirements, ego requirements. When you are going from job to job, theoretically, let's say that you start pouring more and more of your personality and Drew's personality into this framework and you carry it from job to job, would you be able to go to a job that already had a framework? Or maybe didn't use one at all, didn't feel the need for an opinionated framework, and say, all right, I guess I'm not going to be working on Chuck Norris at this job.
Oh, yeah. You know, we'll always be working on Chuck Norris on the side. But, you know, if the company decides that they already have something and they don't want to use it, that's not for no reason it should be a stopper. Maybe it's a good time to see if there's anybody else in the community who wants to step up and continue being very active in the contributions where you kind of take a little bit of a backseat role. With Dropkick, we actually did this. Drew went to a company where they're using something different and they're not going to be using Dropkick. And so I kind of took over as the primary maintainer and actually stepping into the new company, they had a huge need for, you know, a deployment framework. And so a lot of stuff was added in, to answer the needs of, you know, this business. But so
you wouldn't feel bad if you presented this at a company and they were just like, you know, not so much. We got our own thing.
No, I actually ran into some opposition with that, with one of them. And I was kind of like, well, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Did you expect that you would come in and present this and say, all right, here, by the way, yeah, you know, hired me and here's this awesome thing that I've got. You know, you get me and you get this great framework too.
You know, really, that's not usually like the thing I step into an interview with, just like, you know, here I am. Here's all the problems I've solved at this last business. It's not really about the frameworks, you know, at that point.
So you'd, okay. Well, that's interesting. I've always wondered though, like when you hire someone, how much are you bringing their emotional baggage, but you also bring their technical baggage. You know, and
I
have spoken
do.
To people who have brought their frameworks with them, and then I have spoken to people who write a new framework or, you know, on a case-by-case basis.
And I think that's a good point. I think that it can be, if you decide that, you know, this is totally different than what I was doing, you don't try to take that framework that the community is now using and reshape it to something that you now need. That, to me, that seems kind of bad. If you can't mold the business into a way that actually works with your framework, then yeah, maybe it's a good time to explore writing a new framework.
Hmm. What is next for Chuck Norris though? You've got some things that have half started and some things that are really, really going full on. I'm curious what's planned for the future.
I think the plan for the future is just, you know, see how the community wants to take these tools and, you know, see where they want to go. I mean, Roundhouse got Oracle way back in the beginning because a couple of guys looked at all the other frameworks and said, we want this one and we can make this a better framework. And so they came in, they helped with Roundhouse, they got Oracle running. And then, you know, from there, we started something where we had all these multiple database types. To be able to hook in a new database type is very simple. Mm-hmm. It takes, you know, somebody's knowledge of, you know, how do you create the database, how do you restore a database, you know, how do you, you know, create these tables and then put data in these tables. And, of course, how do you run a migration? You know, how do you run all of these different items? But because of that, I mean, we got a lot of community contributions here on this last release, and we added actually three new database types coming in this last release, and two of them came from external sources, mm-hmm. which I thought was awesome. But like I said, you know, none of these tools would be what they are today if it was just my ego or Drew's ego and not mm-hmm. listening to the community and what they need and trying to see if we could shape the tool in that way. So really good advice, I guess, for anybody that works on open source is don't push away, possible contributors just because their ideas are different than yours. Because when you do that, you're closing a door and you're possibly opening another door to competition.
Yeah.
A competition that actually probably could have helped out your project.
I think that's extremely good advice to anyone who's creating a framework. Not only not make it in a vacuum, but really think about what are your motivations, think about who your audience is, listen to your audience, whether it be the job that you're working at or the community. But if someone is using your framework, you should be listening to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
People can check out the Chuck Norris framework at github.com/Chuck Norris. There's lots of stuff there, and you don't have to take the entire framework if you don't want to. You can take just the pieces that make you happy. And as you can tell from what Rob said, both Rob and Drew are listening and are definitely excited to have your opinions about their framework. And I appreciate you, Rob, kicking off the framework series here on the show.
Thanks.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.